get up, get that breakfast started.
We've got Craig Ishwood from the Council of the Citizens of Electric Council. How you doing there, mate?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Jack. Yeah, good.
We've got Harold here, Shard Call. Now, we've been talking all
morning. Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, Craig, were you listening before when I said, made my point about the appeal to authority in terms of climate change?
No, I didn't hear that, Harold.
I was just talking about how this argument is often used that, you know, 97% of scientists agree that climate change is man-made and real and dangerous. And I was just talking about this argument from authority and how it's actually a deceptive argument, and it's actually a logical fallacy in terms of logic and philosophy. Yet people use it all the time. I mean, it's not actually a valid argument to say because 97% of scientists agree that it must be true. It would be like saying 97% of scientists agree that the Earth is round, therefore the Earth is round. That's not the way you prove that the Earth is round. You don't just refer to a bunch of experts. It's just an aspect of this whole thing that really annoys me.
One of the governing lords of science, Lord Kelvin, whom the temperature scale was named after, scoffed at the idea that man could fly. And a couple of years later, the Wright brothers actually invented the aeroplane. Now, at that point, 97% of people would have agreed, or science would have agreed with Lord Kelvin, because in a sense, they're the circles that are paying the bills. And that's what you've got today, and you've got trillions, or you know, multiple billions of dollars at least, being funding the whole so-called science of the global warming, carbon trading, the debacle, for the purpose of population reduction. Now that's the political purpose behind this, and this is a long-term goal of what we refer to as the British Empire, which continues today, but in a different form than it did with gunboats and redcoats back, you know, 150 years ago. It exists in the form of a monetarist empire, which we're suffering under today. So when you talk about the science behind global warming, the real science is that there's global cooling, not global warming, because we're going through, the Earth is moving through, the solar system and our galaxy is moving through a completely different cycle that is even talked about by these so-called scientists. And when you look at various scientists in this country to speak out, very few people have heard of them. People like, I think it's, I forgot his name for the moment, but various people speak out very loudly. They say, I can't even remember their name. Carter, I think. What's his name? Carter up at
Bob Carter.
Bob Carter. That's right.
Very outspoken. Ian Plymer. Very outspoken.
Yeah, we've had Bob Carter on a few times here on Radio Skid Row. I've interviewed him.
So the point is, these people have valid arguments. Listen to what they have to say. I mean, there's nothing wrong.
And of course, you know, if 3 out of 100 scientists disagree, and even if we accept that, which I don't, because I know that when they say scientists, they actually mean climate scientists. When they say 97% of scientists, they don't mean all scientists, they mean climate scientists. And, of course, climate science is like a club. If you're in climate science, it's almost impossible not to go along with this, because that's how you get your funding. You get your funding as a climate scientist by researching climate change and going along with that agenda. You don't get your funding to do research projects by being a skeptic. You just don't get funding for that.
Well, where do skeptics get their research funding from?
They have a lot of trouble getting
there. And usually they have to watch their P's and Q's, otherwise they'll lose it pretty quick.
What about that study they did a couple of weeks ago that was funded by the Koch brothers? And then they found that the stuff that they studied was correlated with the stuff that 97% of climate change scientists agree on.
Who the Koch brothers? Coca-Cola?
No, Koch. K-O-C-H.
Koch brothers. You don't know who they are?
No.
Okay, Koch brothers. Okay, well, it was a couple of weeks ago they did this study, and it was funded by the Koch brothers, very Koch hardcore brothers. Republicans.
Koch brothers is just a family who owns a whole bunch of America. One of the oligarchies in America families, like the George Soros, but on the other side of the wing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's not the best report, is it? There was the best inquiry, which was supposedly led by a skeptic, but he wasn't really a skeptic. He was sort of on the fence. But it was put in the news, it was spun in the news as a skeptic scientist now becomes convinced of global warming. But I actually read that whole information about it and a bit further into it. And in fact, the study itself confirms that there has been no warming for the past 10 years. It actually confirms that, which is actually one of the main arguments that the people, the skeptics, and including those who just say, look, you know, we don't know yet, have been saying is, look, global warming appears to have stopped at the end of the 20th century. And, in fact, his report actually does confirm that. But his report also confirms that there has been a warming trend since about the mid, early 19th century, which we know, undisputed, I don't disagree. All scientists agree with that, including skeptic scientists. There has been a warming trend since the end of the Dawson minimum, which occurred at the end of the 18th century, when it was very, very cold. It was so cold that the Thames froze solid. It was a really cold time, and that cold period lasted for several hundred years, and it was extremely damaging to the economy. It was extremely damaging to people's health, the disease, epidemics, and then it started to warm. In the 19th century, it gradually started warming, and kept warming and warming and warming, and it continued warming through the 20th century at a steady pace, and that's what this report, which I think is the one you're citing, actually confirms. That actually says nothing about human impact at all. It shows the trend that we already knew.
Craig, we want to talk about the Murray-Darling plan that was released on Monday. It's upset a whole heap of people because it's going to hurt the economy. It's going to hurt the environment as well. Could you fill us in a little bit about that?
Well, okay. Yes, the Murray-Darling Authority has just released its plan, which is to cut 2,750 gigalitres of water from the whole Murray-Darling Basin on the basis of trying to restore the balance to the environment. However, the fact is in this particular plan is that the environmental needs of the Murray-Darling Basin are completely undefined. They've just basically set a figure for the environment of 2,750 gigalitres, but they don't explain why, and of course, irrigators and farmers in the entire area that are facing annihilation have jumped on this and complaining bitterly about it. Now, see, there's a whole hidden agenda behind this, which again comes back to the reduction of food supplies in this country. It comes back to the idea that globally you have a green fascist movement run through the British Crown with an agenda to reduce the world's population from 7 billion down to 1 billion people. Now, the Murray-Darling Basin is our food bowl. It can feed, just in rice production alone, up to 40 million people because we have some of the most efficient rice farmers in the world using the most modern technologies in order to produce food. Now, this, again, is all built on a fraud. It's a scientific fraud, and it's a fraud of ecosystems. Now, we've published a fair bit about this in detail in our publication, The New Citizen, Defeat the British Crown's green fascist dictatorship. We go through this in chapter and verse and show how in Australia that the whole green movement was established personally by the British Crown through Prince Philip, how the World Wildlife Fund was established by Prince Philip of and Prince Bernard of the Netherlands, who was a tried and true practicing
and
Nazi.
And Huxley, isn't it?
And Julius Huxley.
Yeah.
Now, look, the fraud that they're using is we have to preserve the ecosystems. We have to have sustainable ecosystems.
Well, that's what we want to have, don't we?
Well, the problem is that the fraud behind that science is that there's no such thing as a sustainable ecosystem without the intervention of mankind. If you want to actually develop the environment, you actually have to use science and technology to do so. If you just leave so-called Mother Nature to do the job, she'll actually destroy the environment. And if you have a look, for example, I was involved in farming about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Wherever you have farming operations, you have an increase in the local fauna because man provides permanent water, actually permanent food supplies, and the wildlife goes actually crazy. It doesn't get destroyed. But see, the whole fraud of the ecosystems is built upon a deliberate twist in science coming out of the the late 20th century, as a response to the tremendous optimism that was unleashed by Abraham Lincoln and the development in the post-war with the Confederacy. You had the Fabian Society at that time, but also you had a key grouping called the Apostles inside Cambridge University in England. Now, that grouping of the Apostles was responsible for the direction that science took right throughout the entire world, starting, of course, in the UK. But this is, again, you want to talk about the limitation of science in terms of just the global warming issue. Well, this was across the board in all different disciplines of science. Now, in order to destroy the tremendous burst of scientific achievements from people like the Curies, Medemann, Pierre Curie, developments coming from Alexander Humboldt, the breakthroughs of all sorts of different scientific revolutions like Einstein, Riemann, Planck, Max Planck, in science, they cooked up the science of ecosystems, and this was done through a guy by the name of Arthur Tansley. Now, we go through it in our paper called The New Citizen, but we just discovered that on the 30th of May 2011, Britain's BBC Channel 2 aired the second part of a three-part documentary whose title was All Watched Over by Machines with Loving Grace. Now, what this was is this: it was a discussion about how the rise of machines and our belief in the balance of nature was basically all determined by the rise of the concept of ecosystems and how that particular concept was invented. Now, this was this program goes through a devastating expose of a guy by the name of Arthur Tansley and the cyberneticists led by a guy by the name of Norbert Wiener. These are information technology freaks, right? Now, what Tansley's main thesis was is that the entire world, the entire universe, works on a system of equilibrium. And this goes back to the second law of thermodynamics, goes back to Lord Kelvin's objections that that everything comes to a state of equilibrium, which is, in fact, scientifically actually not true. It's not how the universe works. The universe is actually unfolding and increasing in energy all the time.
It's dynamic equilibrium. It's constantly changing.
But it's not coming back. It's not coming back to a point of evenness, and it's not winding down, which is a very crucial point, which we go again through in our paper.
Equilibrium is actually stasis, and stasis is actually death. If everything is actually completely balanced out, then there is no change, which is actually the equivalent of death.
That's right. That's why they talk about a heat death, you know, of the universe. And now, this is a complete fraud, because if you look at the nature of the universe, you see that, in fact, the universe is always constantly, particularly the Earth, as the biosphere, is completely increasing in complexity and the number of species. Now, you've had these various extinction cycles throughout the Earth, but every time the extinction cycles lead to a greater breakout of diversity of species at higher levels of the diversity of species, so the development of the Earth itself is actually proof that there is no such thing as an equilibrium, because it's continually increasing in complexity and actually energy. Now, the point is that this guy Tansley wanted to, after World War II, had a dream about how to murder his wife, and to find out what this meant, he went in 1922. Yeah. He went to Vienna to consult with Freud, right? And he got psychoanalyzed, and he came back with the idea that an obscure part of Freud's theory said that the human brain was actually like an electrical machine. That sense data creates bursts of energy which flowed around inside the brain. They created these electrical circuits. Now, Tansley was fascinated by this, and he decided that he could take this model of the mind, i.e. electric circuits, and apply it to the whole natural world, right? So, then you have this idea that the universe is based upon electrical circuits. And then you had another guy come along by the name of Jay Forrester, who was as a leader in cybernetics and systems analysis, and then he added these ideas of feedback loops, that you had these feedback loops in order to keep things, again, in equilibrium. And this particular documentary just goes through how this was all proven to be a complete fraud. No matter how many feedback loops or how big the electrical circuits were, the problem was it was a statistical measure of how the universe works.
Can I just, Craig, can I just try advancing a contrary argument to what you're saying? Because I just want to, I mean, I do actually agree with some of what you're saying, but there's something I want to talk about, which I actually think that biodiversity is actually important. And deforestation, two things, right? One is biodiversity, one is deforestation. Now, I love trees. Okay, I think trees are important, and I'm concerned about the amount of deforestation that is going on around the planet. I don't think it's something we should just say, well, that's progress. Who cares if they chop down all the trees in Kalimantan? Who cares if they chop down all the trees in South America? I really don't think that's a good thing. And the connection there with biodiversity, of course, is that when they do that, there's all these plants and animals that are rare things that are important for medicine that have all these amazing properties, that when you just bring in monoculture and stupidly try and farm these areas in tropical jungles that you've deforested, A, it doesn't even work. If the soil tends to become totally sterile because it wasn't able to sustain that level. The soils aren't rich enough to even do that sort of agriculture. So it's actually, A, stupid. It seems to be driven by some just sort of idiotic, greedy kind of concept of crony capitalism that just sort of says, well, we're going to do it because we can. And it's destructive, and it is destructive to the environment in a real way. And although I agree with you that even when biodiversity shrinks after an extinction, it comes back, I don't think we should be going ahead and wantonly creating extinctions of mass numbers of species. If we can avoid that, I think we should. I mean, what do you say to that?
Okay, well, first of all, the biodiversity issue is too narrow the way you defined it. Because, yeah, of course, the problem with cutting down forests is done by large multinational corporations. In most cases, they go in their clear fell forests. And in many cases, agriculture isn't established behind it. It's just they're just left denuded of the entire area. That's not what we're talking about here. I mean, that's vandalism. That's economic vandalism, whereby you destroy the environment for no reason whatsoever. That's a different idea than actually deliberately shutting things down on the basis of a fraud. Now, the other thing about biodiversity is that the universe itself, or the biosphere in our case, is creating new species all the time. It's not a case of just destroying species for the sake of it. But whether we like it or not, there is enormous numbers of extinctions already taking place right now. There's also new species coming to existence of a higher form. So it's not a case of a static process. I mean, what you're talking about is like a vandalism of a pollution problem. What I'm talking about...
The people who are doing it think it's... I mean, in their deluded way, you know, like... Because I know what they're doing in Indonesia. They've deforested huge parts of Kalimantan and they put plantations in there.
Well, monoculture...
The plantations aren't very successful because the soil can't even handle what they're doing.
Monocultures are part of the agriculture pushed by the British Empire in the sense that you have... This idea of monocultures is insane. In fact, here in this country, what you find is that the most productive farms that you have come from family farmers that look at their farm as a multi-generational investment, and they look after their farms.
Yeah.
Whereas if you take multinational corporations or even large agribusinesses that are run by boards, the bottom line for them is their profit margins, and they don't care what they do to the environment. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happens in terms of most of these deforestation and monoculture issues. And it's driven by, again, globalization, free trade, where the specialization into one monoculture brings a certain level of profit, but at the cost of destroying the soils, sometimes irreparably. And this is the problem of the fraud of this environmentalist movement. Why isn't that being shut down by the British Crown? Because it's part and parcel of the same economic system. Monocultures. Look at the British Empire did, forcing the Indians to grow opium, which was shipped to China, right? They killed, in the 18th century, tens of millions of people died of famine because the British demanded food production be of a certain type and then export it out of India and, through the various merchant houses of England, spread, controlled by the British and spread out through the world. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the deforestation issue is disgusting, but it's done by corporations that have no concern for the future of the planet or in the local areas for real agricultural production. We have the same problem here in this country with the boards of large agricultural corporations that treat the land the same way. Vestis in the Northern Territory was a classic example of this, where a lot of soil degradation, erosion was caused from overgrazing and those sorts of things in the 20th century.
All right, Craig, listen, we've got to get going. Thank you for joining us here in Radio Skid Row.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Got any websites to plug out there for us, mate?
Yeah, look, we talk about a lot of these issues all the time. Our website is www.cecaust.com. www.scienceofmatter.com.au. And people can get our material there. No problem.
That's been very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.